Some stories feel like they're stitched into your soul. They grow with you like bones. They clothe you like a second skin. A story that has grown with me from childhood to womanhood is a centuries-old tale of forbidden love, spirited resistance, and empowered metamorphosis. The classic Indian film Mughal-e-Azam, or The Great Mughal, follows the 16th century court dancer Anarkali, who conquers the heart of the rebellious Prince Selim. But consumed with fear of the mighty Emperor Akbar the Great, Anarkali denies her lover and stifles her own passion. Yet in a transformative scene, Anarkali finds the courage she lacked before. She was timid, but now fearless. She was doubtful, but now determined. She dances her last dance, singing out her love for the prince. Her bare feet, stained with blood-red henna, pound the marble palace floor. Anarkali knows this will mean imprisonment and even death, but she transforms herself from a shy servant to a powerful symbol of defiant love. She sings, "Pyar kiya to darna kiya." When you fall in love, what is there to fear? It is her moment of metamorphosis. As a young girl, I was enthralled by Anarkali's transformation. When I experienced my own metamorphosis, transitioning from a girl into a woman, the story of Anarkali spoke to me even more deeply. Stories of metamorphosis have always captivated me. They are woven with enduring truths, moral lessons, and provocative challenges. I marvel at the transfiguration in ancient myths, muse on the transition of status of princes to ascetics, and reflect on the transformation of heart and conscience. I see the tales of metamorphosis as both glorious and sinister, influential and cautionary. These tales profoundly impact our collective psyche. They carve out the story of the human experience. They can reveal our darker nature, our baser desires, but they also reveal our resilience, our fragility, and our true identities. These notions are captured in the vivid and deeply sensual poem Lamia by John Keats. It tells the mythical tale of a beautiful serpent-like creature who strikes a deal with the Greek god Hermes to transform her back into a woman. The poem is layered with ambiguity, sexuality, and sinister metamorphosis.
Left to herself, the serpent now began to change. Her elfin blood in madness ran, her mouth foamed, and the grass therewith besprent, withered a dew so sweet and virulent. Her eyes in torture fixed, an anguish drear, hot, glazed and wide, with lid-lashes all sear, flashed phosphor and sharp sparks without one cooling tear. The colours all inflamed throughout her train, she writhed about, convulsed with scarlet pain. A deep Vulcanian yellow took the place of all her milder mooned body's grace. And as the lava ravishes the mead, spoilt all her silver mail and golden breed, made gloom of all her freckling streaks and bars, eclipsed her crescents and licked up her stars, so that, in moment's view, she was undressed of all her sapphires, greens and amethyst and rubious argent. Of all these bereft, nothing but pain and ugliness were left.
Keats hoped his poem of the Serpent Woman would start a fire in people. It's a fire I see reflected in the primeval story of a djinn, a supernatural creature said to be of smokeless fire. In the Islamic creation story, Satan, known as Iblis, is a djinn, but his intense burning devotion to God leads him to keep company in the assembly of angels. Then Adam was created. Iblis's arrogance and jealousy of God's preference for a human transforms him from being a djinn among angels to a djinn among demons. His metamorphosis, triggered by hubris, is a turning point that will weigh on humanity for millennia. The Quran tells the story that, for me, holds the greatest warning.
We said to the angels, "Bow down before Adam." And they did, but not Iblis. He was not of those who bowed down. God said, "What prevented you from bowing down as I commanded you?" And he said, "I am better than him. You created me from fire, and him from clay." God said, "Get down from here. This is no place for your arrogance." And then Iblis said, "Because you have put me in the wrong, I will lie in wait for them all on your straight path. I will come at them from their front and their back, from their right and their left, and you will find most of them ungrateful."
I see the ultimate lesson in the transformation of Iblis's extreme love for God into his extreme contempt for humankind. It is the first warning for humanity, the first time arrogance, prejudice, even racism was ever displayed. Satan's menacing metamorphosis has chilling consequences for humanity, for our psyche. We fight our demons every day, those of our own egos, vanity, and darker nature. It's so easy to slip into oblivion. This is why there is yearning for renewal, for rebirth. William James, the founding father of modern psychology of religion, says our initial worth as human beings requires a second birth. That is, some form of radical transformation, an undoing and refashioning of the person. This second birth is what Buddha experienced in the 6th century BC. It was a birth of conscience. I journeyed through the Far East some years ago and was drawn towards the sound of chanting that fell like caresses on the air around a Buddhist temple. There was something so strange yet familiar in the chants that embraced my senses. Something so profound in the drum that beat with my heart. As if the echo of Buddha's ancient meditation broke through the walls of centuries to reach me now, in this moment. It took a transformation of conscience, of heart, of will for Buddha, for his life was radically different before. He was a prince of pleasures. His father, the king, filled every inch of his son's life with luxury and plenty. He distracted him from poverty and suffering in the kingdom. But the young prince finally opened the eyes of his conscience. Through this inner metamorphosis, the once royal heir found the balance he sought, the middle path away from extremes, and transformed from an indulgent youth to Buddha, the awakened one. According to his teachings, he imparted,
"Nothing is permanent. Everything is subject to change. Being is always becoming."
In the Hindu tradition, Buddha is respected as one of many avatars of Vishnu, the preserver and protector of the universe. Avatar in Sanskrit means manifestation, and its derivative, avataram, means metamorphosis. Vishnu experienced multiple forms of metamorphosis as a turtle, as a hunter, as Ram the warrior, and as Krishna, the god of compassion, love, and tenderness. Metamorphosis is a constant in Hinduism. Even while his forms are morphing, Lord Vishnu, the Almighty, remains, embracing and encompassing all beings. It echoes our own patterns of change, from childhood to adulthood, to old age, and then into the next life, until one reaches the Lord. The Bhagavad Gita conveys this when Lord Krishna tells his warrior friend Arjuna,
"As a person puts on new garments, giving up old ones, similarly, the soul accepts new material bodies, giving up the old and useless ones. You should not grieve for the body. If, however, you think that the soul is perpetually born and always dies, still you have no reason to lament, O mighty armed. For one who has taken his birth, death is certain. And for one who is dead, birth is certain. Therefore, in the unavoidable discharge of your duty, you should not lament."
But metamorphosis did bring lament for the last Maharaja of the Sikh Empire, Maharaja Duleep Singh. A 19th century painting depicts him standing magnificent, proud, robed in rich Indian silks. Upon his head, a turban gleams with pearls and precious stones. But this regal Sikh ruler lies buried in Suffolk, having had a Christian funeral. His mother, Jind Kaur, was a formidable symbol of Sikh pride and resistance against the British Raj, who forcibly separated her from her son. Duleep Singh was taken to England aged 15, where he converted to Christianity and became an Englishman. After nearly 14 years apart, mother and son were reunited. Jind Kaur placed her hand on her son's bare head that was once adorned with a bejeweled Sikh turban and said,
"Raj Pak Kusa, Takht Taj Kusa."
I lost my kingdom, my diamonds and throne, even my dignity. But if I feel deep sadness, for it is today when your heart for Sikhism has gone.
Yet this reunion sparked a new transformation. Duleep's Sikh passion was reignited. Even though his physical body did not return to India, his spiritual heart came home to his true identity. The heart is the center of conscience in Islam. It is the vessel that I believe houses my spiritual core. I've always gravitated towards the wisdoms in the Sufi tradition that focus on transforming the heedless heart, that invoke a spiritual metamorphosis. This is what the 19th century Mauritanian scholar Imam al-Maulud captured in his didactic poem Matarat al-Qulub, Purification of the Hearts. It lays out how to transform apathy to consciousness, hatred to compassion, miserliness to generosity.
I begin by starting with the heart of beginnings, for it is the highest and noblest of beginnings. Have courtesy with God, the high and majestic, by practicing modesty and humility. Realize your abject character and impoverishment, and you will gain dignity and wealth from the All-Powerful. There is no salvation like the heart's salvation, given that all the limbs and organs respond to its desires.
I seek the spiritual transformation that reconfigures ugly traits to beautiful characteristics. Yet beauty became deformity for the anti-hero in The Picture of Dorian Gray by Oscar Wilde. The protagonist is a simple, pure, and impressionable young innocent who submits to temptation and vice. His outer appearance is merely a beautiful masquerade for the disease that lurks beneath. The portrait slowly paints the truth of his twisted soul, the course of his inner disfiguration.
His eye fell on a large purple satin coverlet. Yes, that would serve to wrap the dreadful thing in. It had perhaps served often as a pall for the dead. Now it was to hide something that had a corruption of its own, worse than the corruption of death itself. Something that would breed horrors and yet would never die. What the worm was to the corpse, his sins would be to the painted image on the canvas. They would mar its beauty and eat away its grace. They would defile it and make it shameful. His own soul was looking out at him from the canvas and calling him to judgment.
Dorian Gray's portrait draws out his guilty conscience. It paints both his Adonis-like beauty and his hideous curse. I'm reminded of how beauty and curse entwine when my mind wanders back to a childhood keepsake. When I was 7 years old, one of my most prized possessions was a musical jewellery box. When I unclasped the lock and lifted the lid, a tiny ballerina twirled inside to the sound of Tchaikovsky's Swan Lake. Looking back now, I see how the ballerina was trapped inside the music box, just as Odette, the princess of Swan Lake, was trapped by a curse. In a story derived from Russian and German folktales, Odette transforms into a sorrowful swan in the day and only at night regains her human form. Transfiguration forms the core narrative of so many cultures and beliefs. It's a way to understand the changing natural world and fathom the flux and mysteries of human nature. In ancient Greek and Roman mythology, metamorphosis meant survival, disguise, punishment, and renewal. Zeus turns into a swan to seduce Leda. Daphne becomes a laurel tree to protect her purity when escaping Apollo's lust. And Arachne is transformed into a spider by Athena after arrogantly challenging the goddess of crafts to a weaving contest. The Roman poet Ovid recounts all these myths and more in his epic poem, Metamorphoses.
I want to speak about bodies changed into new forms. You, gods, since you are the ones who alter these and all other things, inspire my attempt and spin out a continuous thread of words from the world's first origins to my own time. And now the work is done, that Jupiter's anger, fire or sword cannot erase, nor the gnawing tooth of time. Let that day, that only has power over my body, end when it will. My uncertain span of years. Yet the best part of me will be born, immortal, beyond the distant stars. Wherever Rome's influence extends, over the lands it has civilized, I will be spoken on people's lips. And famous through all the ages, if there is truth in poets' prophecies. Vivam. I shall live.
Ovid's Metamorphoses gives him many lives. It's influenced and manifested in the works of writers and artists throughout the centuries, from Shakespeare and Milton to the great artists of the Renaissance. It filters down to one of my favourite films, My Fair Lady, which was inspired by the Greek myth of Pygmalion. Pygmalion is a lonely sculptor who crafts his ideal woman and falls so deeply in love with the cold ivory statue that she becomes warm flesh and blood. Dorothy Reed captures the feel of marble, flesh and blood in her poem, The Woman Who Was Marble.
Entrusted with a body and a mind, born of the body or the body's sire, she weighed the excellence of frost and fire, the clouted rope, the wiry shirt of hair, the bed of crumpled petals. Finding there no edge deliverance she had hoped to find, no cutting instrument by which the bone and flesh of her could carve to stone. For she had seen stone men and women, and they were stone. They were not flesh and blood.
Feeling the weight of loss, dwelling in flesh and blood, heavy heartedness, bone shaken. Leave this town.
Irish singer-songwriter Alva Reddy with Flesh and Blood. It is often through the trial of pain that we metamorphose. A rite of passage requires sacrifice, strength, and growth. Teenagers understand this most of all. The physical change, the mental shift, the growing pains of metamorphosis. In a comic book series entitled The 99, created by entrepreneur and clinical psychologist Dr. Naif Al-Matawa, the superheroes have a divine twist. The 99 embody the 99 names of God, inspired by the Islamic tradition. There's Bari, the healer, with the ability to heal the wounded. Noura, the light, who has the power to see the light of truth. And Mujiba, the responder, who can access the collective wisdom of humanity. Each attribute has been channeled into a superhero to reflect the supernatural power of the divine names. When I call upon God as Ar-Rahman, the compassionate, or Al-Wadud, the loving, I call upon God's unconditional love in the hope of receiving it, in the hope it will transform me into a more loving person, and in the hope of receiving more love from others. It is a metamorphosis of my heart, my soul, and my environment. Muslims have captured the 99 names in song for centuries across the globe. One rhythmic rendition is by Malaysian Nasheed group Rayhan.
Nas'aluka ya man huwa Allahu alladhi la ilaha illa huwa ar-Rahmanu ar-Rahim al-Maliku al-Quddus as-Salamu al-Mu'minu al-Muhaiminu al-Azizu al-Jabbar.
It is through the power of divine metamorphosis that I recall the words of the Bible in the second epistle of the Corinthians.
And we all, who with unveiled faces contemplate the Lord's glory, are being transformed into his image with ever-increasing glory, which comes from the Lord, who is the Spirit.
The transfiguration of Christ is a profoundly pivotal moment. It is a meeting point of man and the divine, of the earthly and the celestial. Christ is gleaming like the sun, his garments a radiant light. This episode expounds the glory of Jesus' metamorphosis and is a vital precursor to the ultimate transformation through resurrection. Christ's metamorphosis reminds me of the simple but powerful metamorphosis of the butterfly, which can symbolize life, death, and the eternal journey of human beings. From an earthly caterpillar to a grave-like cocoon, to the final freedom of a butterfly, the story of metamorphosis is contained so profoundly in the most pertinent of nature's miracles. Its simplicity and depth is a child's imagining and an adult's understanding, as the author of Winnie the Pooh, A.A. Milne, writes in his classic work.
"How does one become a butterfly?" Pooh asks pensively. "You must want to fly so much that you are willing to give up being a caterpillar," Piglet replied. "You mean to die?" asked Pooh. "Yes and no," he answered. "What looks like you will die, but what's really you will live on."
For me, the tales of metamorphosis expand my experience of the human condition. They explore the fear, hope, aspiration, and the journey of our changing lives. A transformation of fortune, status, and even physical being can lead to suffering, loss, and degeneration, but can also offer a path towards renewal, integrity, and spiritual evolution.
Gonna be a transformation in your heart and soul.
Metamorphosis reminds me of my life's purpose, to move away from stasis and to constantly encourage the need for reform, for renewal, for reflection. And for that, I go to the root of myself, for the real transformation begins down in your soul.
Gonna be a transformation right down in your soul. Gonna be a transformation.